In brightest day,
in blackest night.
There is what I do. What I do best isn't very nice.
The Comic Culture Radio Show. Chris Owen, Walter DeRiley.
Excelsior!
Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. To hear the lamentation of the women.
Welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster Radio, and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. Comic Culture, of course, is the radio show that champions the local comic book store. I'm Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Christopher Owen, comic book history professor at Mohawk College.
And we are your Bruins and Canucks
in the Stanley Cup world of comic books.
Chris, that made no sense whatsoever.
Hey, you know, you're the one that wrote it earlier. I just, you know.
You know what? Today is Wednesday. It's a big day today.
I got nothing to work with here. Nothing to work
big
with.
Big game today. Big day today. Today, Wednesday, I'm going for the Canucks. I'd like to see the Cup back in Canada.
Yes, me too.
And, you know, and that's kind of, you're right. That's all I came up with. I apologize.
Right. Yeah, but that's all that's on your mind. I understand. It's okay.
But listen, no comics. It's Wednesday, Chris, at local comic book stores across North America, across the world. New comics are hitting the stands today.
Do you think now with, remember a few months ago, Stanley came up with those NHL mascot things with all the different Canucks and everything?
Oh, the Guardian project.
Yeah. Do you think comics are selling like hotcakes now that the Stanley Cup is involved? And now we got the Canucks going and the Bruins and that giant bear thing
Remember that commercial, the Stanley Cup commercial where it gets lost? And there's some guy in Mexico, he's using it to store coffee outside his store.
Yes.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Anyway. He's got a Stanley comic next to him as well, yeah.
Chris, we're going to talk first, as we always do at every show, about comics.
New comics that are new this week. New comics.
And I'm going to read our sponsor this week. New this week's brought to you by Stars and Stripes Shield Polish. Before you throw that shield and decapitate your enemies, make sure it shines in the light.
Oh, well, that's good. It's so that they can see themselves getting, you know, decapitated.
Yeah, Stars and Stripes shield polish. Pick it up, I guess, at any local hardware store.
Yeah, I think Canadian Tire sells it.
Right. And we're going to start today, Chris, with IDW. IDW is coming out with Godzilla, Gangsters, and Goliath.
You know what? I took a little peruse of this comic before the show. And this is a fantastic comic.
It really is.
You know what? It's Godzilla. It's a spinoff of the Godzilla titles. Remember, we talked a few weeks ago about how IDW was doing the Godzilla book with all the store franchises.
Yes, I remember.
Well, obviously, they've decided to put out more than just the one Godzilla book. And you know what I really like about this book is that it really showcases the various monsters on Monster Island. You know, there's one scene where Mothra is like, you know, looking at Godzilla, kind of telling him what to do, and there's Mothra and Spina and King Ghidorah, I think,
Spina
is there.
Spina! Yeah, oh, you know, man,
it's
awesome. Just,
it's chock full of monsters.
Chock full of monsters.
And if you want to buy a Godzilla comic, what more do you want than monsters?
Yeah, you know what, Chris? I have a different take on what happened. Here's what I think happened. There was a guy that missed the meeting on the promo. Yeah. On the store promo. He went on vacation. He came back. He was looking at numbers, going, Christ! We're selling like 60,000 of these things. Let's print another title. He forgot that he didn't know.
Yeah, that's very possible. Yeah.
So I think that's what happened with Godzilla.
Well, you know, if you're a Godzilla fan, however, it might be good for you.
Yeah, I'm sure there's tons of those guys.
You just insulted all of them.
I'm sorry.
All five of them.
So Gangsters and Gun. No.
Gangsters and Guns. That's what it's called. Godzilla, Gangsters and Guns.
No, hold on. Stop. Remember. In the 50s,
oh boy,
there was that crime comic called Gangsters and Gun Malls.
Really?
Yeah, Gangsters and Gun Malls.
I don't remember that one.
And I think that's what the play on words is here.
I remember there was one called Guns Against Gangsters.
Of course, wouldn't you?
Well, I'm just saying.
No, but okay, stop.
How about Godzilla against Gangsters?
Right. How about Godzilla, Gangsters, and Goliaths at your local comic book stop today? Stop. At your local comic book stop. Yeah.
Stop.
Stop.
Are we reading a telegram? Stop. Beep, 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 beep. Stop. Beep, beep, beep.
Hello. Alpha Flight, Fear Itself, number one. It's an 8-part miniseries. And, of course, it ties into the huge, huge Fear Itself story. What do you call it?
Crossover event?
Crossover event that Marvel's doing this summer.
You know, I took a quick look through this book before the show, and it looked like a pretty cool book. Actually, Dale Eaglesham, who is actually a Canadian, he's on a Canadian book. It has a lot of Canadian-type stuff in it. It looks like a pretty cool book. They're even talking in the book about, you know, the look of some of the characters, and they use obviously the right terms, like prime minister instead of president and things like that.
Oh,
and
very good.
I think it's actually a pretty neat book. It really harkens back to the old days of Alpha
Harkens.
Flight. Harkens.
Hark.
Why in my day it harkened back to 1906.
Yeah.
It's a really really good-looking book there, and it even has some of the characters like Box and Sasquatch and stuff like that.
I'm noticing, though, I opened up the first page. I have a copy in front of me here, and I opened up the first page, and there's a lineup of the Alpha Flight. And already I'm ticked off.
Why are you ticked off?
There's no Puck.
Okay, but you know what? Puck is probably coming up later on.
Right.
Okay?
Tonight.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right, Howie. So there's no Puck. But it is Alpha Flight.
He'll be showing up eventually. I mean, they can't have Alpha Flight without Puck.
Yeah, that's what I say.
I can't believe we're talking this much about Puck. All right? That's what I'm confused about.
All right, let's drop the Puck already.
Drop the Puck. Hey!
Oh, all right, boy. So Alpha Flight, Fear Itself, part one, 8-part miniseries, hitting the stands at your local comic book shop today.
Oh, man.
Man. Let's see, Chris, let's jump over to DC before it's too late.
Okay.
Look at this. Another Flashpoint one-shot.
Oh, how great is that? Yeah,
right.
That's great.
Now, last week you were on vacation. You went down to Florida, and I remember talking to you before then.
Yes.
You said to me, if I remember the quote, Walt, I'm taking Flashpoint stuff down, and I'm going to figure out this damn thing and what it's all about.
You know what? I did, and I couldn't figure it out. I read every Flashpoint book I could possibly get myself onto, and I could not understand what's going on.
Okay. So
I tried. I really did. So I tried.
You failed.
Why you got to put it like that? I didn't necessarily fail. I mean, you know, it's an unsurmountable challenge that you've given me here, and I can't possibly, you know, grasp the concept.
Right. I'm sorry. So this is Grodd. God of War.
Which, of course, is a playoff on terms because there's a PlayStation game called God of War. So this is God of War. So they're trying to, you know, play on terms here.
Now, Grodd, of course, is the gorilla.
He is a gorilla.
Right.
He is Gorilla Grodd. And, of course, he's probably one of the Flash's main canon of villains. Arch foes, if you will.
Now, I remember reading a little bit of history on DC and the stupidity of back in the late 50s, early 60s, Julius Schwartz, you know, was EIC and everything there. And it's like some guy was just figuring stuff out and goes, God damn, every time we get a gorilla on the cover, we sell more copies.
It's true.
Let's just put gorillas on covers.
Yeah, you know what? Gorillas were the mainstay of the DC universe for sure. Absolutely.
Right.
You know,
no apparent reason.
Did I ever tell you that I actually had a long conversation with Julius Schwartz at one point?
No.
Yeah, it was great. I remember we were at a convention.
Julius Schwartz, of course, is the DC's Stan Lee.
Yeah, he's the guy that pretty well created everything and all that kind of stuff. And I was talking with Julius Schwartz at one point about DC Comics, and I was with a buddy at the time, and we asked him. We said, like, you know, so what did you say when people would come up to you and say, hey, I got an idea for a story, like, you know, how about the giant Flash head? And you know, Julius Schwartz actually said, what do you mean, come up with a story? I came up with all those stories, you know. So he really was the true Stan Lee of the DC universe.
Now, when you probably met him, that's got to be 20 years ago.
No,
right?
No, this is about I'd say maybe 5-6 years ago. This is unfortunately what in his later years, and he was a really great guy to meet and talk to. And but you know what? I thought highly of the guy. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
All right. Well, may he rest in peace.
Yeah.
Right. Because he passed a few years ago.
For
right.
Sure.
All right,
for
Chris.
Sure.
We have one more. We have so many great comics hitting the stands at your local comic book shop today. But obviously, you and I can't discuss all of them.
No, I know. Unfortunately.
So I got one more, and that is Conan, Island of No Return, number one.
You know what? I thought this is a good book to talk about today because it is another Conan number one, but I thought even more interesting. It's written by Ron Mars, and it's drawn by, hold on, I can't remember his name, Bart Sears.
Bart Sears.
And these are two guys that have been around in the industry for a long time. I mean, Ron Mars wrote a lot of Silver Surfer, and Bart Sears, he did a lot of books for DC as well, especially Justice League Europe and things like that.
Right.
So these guys have been around for a long time, and here they are now writing Conan, one of the classic characters. I just thought it was kind of interesting that two classic artists and writers are now writing a classic character.
Yeah, now I'm looking through this. It doesn't say on here, it doesn't say whether this is, it's Island of No Return. So I would imagine this is a limited series, right? But I just don't know. Is this an ongoing? I have to find this out, whether it's an ongoing series or not. Or because usually Dark Horse is pretty good, you know, part one of five and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, so, yeah,
because I don't know if this is the new Conan series.
I think it's just, I think it's just like a mini series or something
right,
like that.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so pick up Conan, Island of No Return at your local comic book store today. And, of course, we're going to end New This Week right there. Always, always please head into your local comic book store, support your local comic book shop, peruse the New This Week, and pick something up that you haven't before.
Absolutely. And just for your listening pleasure, now we're going to have a little bit of the old G.I. Joe cartoon.
Yo, Joe!
Fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe, American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
It's G.I. Joe against Cobra the enemy, fighting to save the day. He never gives up, he's always there, fighting for freedom over land and air.
G.I. Joe,
Joe is the code name for America's daring, highly trained special mission force. Its purpose? To defend human freedom against Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
He never gives up. He'll stay till the fight's won. G.I. Joe will dare.
G.I. Joe.
Chris, I love that tune, G.I. Joe. Now, those are the same guys that did YMCA, weren't they?
I don't believe it was the Village People. No? I'm not entirely too sure, although there were a few guys that kind of looked
right.
like that.
Right, they sounded. Maybe. Yeah, I think it was. Let's say it was them.
Well, you know, okay. You might get a few G.I. Joe fans a little ticked off if you say that. But, you know, whatever. You know what? You can't make an omelet without cracking a few eggs, right?
Right. Yeah. And, of course, now that brings us, Chris, into – and that G.I. Joe, of course, was a great segue into industry news.
Yes, yes.
And I'm looking for the sponsor for industry news, which I've lost.
Oh, boy.
Right?
There we go.
So
you know what? Well, why don't we do the sponsor later on?
No, we'll talk about industry news is brought to you by the Daily Bugle.
Oh, boy. There you go.
It is a paper that you should be picking up because Peter Parker works there.
Oh, that was great. that was really, really, really great.
Right,
oh,
Chris,
boy.
Let's talk about the San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay.
Let's talk about I'm reading something on the net about these major studios
right.
deserting the San Diego Comic-Con.
So a lot of these major studios have decided that they're going to not premiere their movies at this year's San Diego Comic-Con, which is sort of unusual because so many studios in the past have been doing so. And I think this is probably a good idea. I don't know what you think about
good
this.
Good idea for who?
I think it's right for the studios not to do this.
Is it good for San Diego Comic-Con, though?
Well, I think there's plenty of people that are going to want to go to San Diego Comic-Con. It might not be all that good for them, but man, you know what? I think it's a good idea for the studios because – so in the past, you've got all these kind of movies like Green Lantern and Captain America and Thor and all the Avengers and all kinds of movies that have premiered at the San Diego Comic-Con, but they haven't necessarily done all that well.
Right.
If you look at, say, a movie like Scott Pilgrim,
right,
which they they hung this like 100-foot banner outside of one of the hotels, and they did all this promotion, and they spent $60 million on making the movie, and the movie only ended up grossing like $32 million.
Ouch.
So I think part of the problems here is the fact that these studios sometimes don't bring their A material to this A-list convention. They bring trailers that aren't necessarily always finished. They bring stuff like, you know, they'll have things that, you know, don't have the special effects involved. They have, improper people planning things. It doesn't always work.
Well, look, this is, no, I think you're wrong. You've never been more wrong.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Okay, Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Okay, so Scott Pilgrim is this thing read by, you know, guys that work at Starbucks.
Yeah.
You know, that's read by this kind of cliquey, I don't know, young 20s, late teens crowd and big city kind of, they have this little, they go to, I don't know what they do, they do cosplay probably. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Do you know what you're talking about?
No. Yes, I do, but okay. I don't, right?
All right.
And it's kind of a weird thing. But what I'm saying is it doesn't have a built-in mass appeal. Yeah, so the okay. studio was stupid to try to go the mass appeal route for
right.
a underground kind of subculture type of movie.
So they decided to try. They decided to promote heavily to a culture that would probably already go to the show.
No. Well, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the point is, they're promoting it to the people that already.
Okay.
Hold on. No. The guys in there, real. You know those. What are those parachute pants in the 80s? You know those guys that go. Those guys that go to the con in their parachute pants with their sons and stuff like that.
Okay.
Because, you know, they go to cons, too. You know, and they're a big part of the cons.
Sure.
My point is so, they walked by that Scott Pilgrim thing, and they go, what the hell is that? Right?
Yeah.
They're not going to go to the movie.
Sir,
but hold on. If the studio at the what's the con called again?
San Diego Comic-Con.
If the studio is promoting Superman.
Yeah.
Batman.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay. These are the things that are the populist things.
Okay.
These are the things that are going to get the spandex guy, not spandex, what do you call those? Parachute guy.
Okay.
He's going to go to the movie with his son.
Okay.
They were totally wrong with the Scott Pilgrim.
Okay. My point is though, Christopher Nolan, who is the director of Batman, he and the Warner Brothers people have never pushed any of the newer Batman franchises at San Diego Comic-Con, and they've done fantastic. The shows, the movies that have done that have been promoted have done horribly.
Oh, it's like a Bambino curse. Was that what this is?
Okay.
Come on.
But hold on. Now, having said that, the TV shows that have been promoted have done phenomenally well. Like, for example, Lost. When Lost was promoted before it even aired on the show, it had the premiere at the convention and it did phenomenally well. Much, and they do shows like Big Bang Theory and Chuck, and they continue to do well.
Right. I think we were having a really, really small data pool here, and we're going with things that, and then we're trying to analyze a really small database set here. There's nothing wrong with promoting a huge populist movie at San Diego Comic-Con. Because the couple that they didn't work out does not mean it's not a good place to promote it.
The only thing I'm going to say, because we're spending far too long on this, the only thing I'm going to say about that is, the problem with that is if the studios come without their A game, that the convention goers are going to pick it apart and they're already going to say that it's crap and say that it's terrible. And before it even has a chance, it's going to bomb.
Oh, so what you're saying is Batman and the Dark Knight and the Man of Steel are crap and they don't want to show it to the hipsters at the con.
They don't. No, what I'm saying is that they don't want to actually show it before it's ready, which is what happens a lot of times at this convention. They prepare things not to their A game, and then it ends up bombing.
Right. All right. Well, listen, Cowboys and Aliens, Spielberg might actually be there, promoting Tintin.
Yeah.
And Rise of the Planet of the Apes, those three movies will get coverage.
They will be there
to promote the comic.
But as we know, Christopher Nolan is not going to have The Dark Knight there, nor is the Warner Brothers going to have Superman Returns.
Right.
Or Man of Steel, rather.
Man of Steel. All right. Well, listen, if you're heading down to the San Diego Comic-Con,
Let us know what you think.
All right. Let's move it on, Chris. Let's talk about Uncanny X-Men. Uncanny X-Men.
Yes. It's ending.
It's ending.
Crazy.
Number 544 coming out in October will be the last issue of the, you know, the longest X-Men title there.
Yeah,
back to September 63.
Yeah, this is crazy. I don't really know why they're ending these things, but it seems to be the popular thing to do, which is what we'll talk about at the later part of the show with DC ending things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it seems like you know, they just don't really know what to do with characters anymore, and they want to just sort of evolve things a little bit.
You know what?
And,
but my take on it is, it doesn't matter anymore.
No.
Like there's no collecting. The numbering sequence was, I think, best serving the collecting community.
Absolutely, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So
you're right.
There was a collector that wanted issue 1 to 500, and he's collecting and stuff like that. There is no longer a collecting community.
You know, that is perhaps the best point you've made in the last 2 months.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
That's good.
Yeah, it's good.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I'm gonna write that down.
I think you should.
But mark that
in your calendar.
Like so because X-Men is a viable property. There are, I don't know. I'm gonna guess there's 233 monthly X-Men titles going now.
Maybe 34, but yeah.
Yeah. So there are a lot of X-Men titles going on right now.
Yeah.
What's that new X-Men movie called? It just came up.
X-Men First Class.
First Class, yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's a big hit.
Right. Yeah. Well, people are saying that it's the best Marvel movie ever.
Right.
Yeah, even and better than Iron Man.
Yeah. So X-Men is healthy. X-Men's a healthy, viable property.
Yeah.
And they don't need – and they're just saying, hey, we don't need that old dinosaur uncanny. Let's just start another miniseries or something
Yeah, and clearly they don't need Hugh Jackman or Halle Berry or any of those other kind of schleps who were in the other X-Men movies.
Schleps. Yeah. Right. All right. So – hey, good riddance to Uncanny X-Men. I hate to see it go being an old purist like that.
Yeah, but you know what? Maybe we don't need it anymore.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Hey, maybe we can fit in the fact that on the Marvel side, New Avengers, number 16.1. I'm excited about this because I like Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah, and you also like the artist.
I also like Neil Adams.
Yeah.
And I think this is their first collaboration. So we're getting Neil Adams doing the art for a Brian Michael Bendis story in the New Avengers 16.1.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and really, here's a guy that was that Neil Adams is a legend in his time, and Brian Michael Bendis has become legendary for his
writing. Yes.
So this is kind of a cool idea.
The Colin Michael Bendis, Brian Michael Bendis, the architect of Marvel. He's like the Jeff Johns.
He kind of is,
of,
yeah.
You know,
right.
They're kind of competing. To see who can screw things up more,
I guess, exactly.
Point. All right. Speaking of screwing things up, you and I like to talk every now and then about how comic books are doing.
Yes.
And clearly,
it seems like some of them are doing better than others.
Yeah, well, May wasn't a good month. No.
And you know what's funny is that in the graphic novel section, number one, I am almost shocked to see what that number one is, this comic called Crossed.
Well, Crossed, the Garth Ennis crap that I like to call crap. I mean, a lot of people just swear by Crossed. They think it's great. Right? And Crossed is a – I don't know what the best way to describe Crossed is. It's just basically I'm going to try to insult –
I saw a guy with a chainsaw on the cover.
Right. I'm going to try to insult anybody's sensibilities as much as I can within these pages.
You.
Right.
Yeah.
And then that's what they do with Crossed. And so – but it has a price point of $8 or $9, which I think propelled its the amount
sales.
Of the sale the quantity of sales up. And then Star Wars the little digest was second.
Yeah.
But then really the Batman and Robin hardcover volume 3 Batman Must Die that sold almost as much as Crossed, but at a 3 times as much price point.
Right.
So that kind of ruled the day in terms of,
you know,
of value.
Kind of, I mean, looking at these graphic novel sales, I never realized the quantities before. I didn't realize how low they really were. I'm, you know, like not even 5,000 copies of Star Wars, you know, and it's number two. 5,000 isn't very much.
The thing, though, with graphic novels, is just I'll take example of Ultimate Spider-Man. Graphic novels are, you know, we're in tune to the monthlies,
right,
where the monthlies have that shelf life of basically a month.
Right, right.
Where the graphic novels, something like 5,000, they can repeat that close to it month after month after month
month.
Ultimate Spider-Man, I believe, has sold over 1 million copies.
Right.
You know,
right.
Walking Dead Volume 1, Walking Dead, all the volumes, really, Scott Pilgrim, they continue to sell. So there's, you know, those aren't bad numbers if they're sustainable. As long as they are year one Batman and old,
yeah, well, those have been around for 20 years, though.
But they still sell.
Okay, but look at number 10 here on the list is American Vampire hardcover. Number it is the 10th highest selling book in May,
yeah.
And it still only sold 2,700 copies. I mean, that's nothing, really. I mean, it's a lot, but it's
good
nothing.
Point. I mean, good point. But it had a $25 price point.
Fair enough. Right. Okay, look at number 9. It was $15, and it was one issue higher than the American Vampire.
Right. Fair enough. But I guess my point is that these things, if they're good, they will have a shelf life of years. In which case,
maybe the writers and artists should be happy that they even sold 2,700 copies.
The thing that concerns me about these numbers, Chris, is over on the comic side, you have the two big. Properties,
yep.
Marvel and DC.
Yep.
You have Fear Itself and you have Flashpoint. And in May, Fear Itself beat Flashpoint out. So Flashpoint number one sold just under 87,000. Fear Itself number two sold just over 96,000.
Right.
Now, in the old, both of them, these are big, these aren't just like, you know, Avengers number 19
no,
or Batman
no.
and Robin number 12.
Yeah, yeah.
These are huge crossover
yeah,
events.
Yeah.
They could not crack that 100,000 mark.
No, which is both surprising and disappointing.
Yeah.
Because really, for the big major crossovers, these should be cracking 150,000
in
quantities.
Easy, but right? It's a continuing trend where the monthlies are losing steam.
But why is that, though? Is that because people are getting tired of all these crossover events where, you know, the big companies think that this is what they want them to, this is what the public wants? Or is the public actually, you know, saying, hey, you know what, I'm sick of all this stuff?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's that even. I'm not sure what it is. Honestly, I'm not sure what it is, because here's the, what do you call that thing? The dilemma here. I don't know what the right word is here, but the
ebb and flow of comic books.
Yeah, okay, Chris, close. But my point is this, is the monthly comic book from whoever, let's say Marvel and stuff like that, the monthly comic book is the one in the last 20, 30 years that is driving the stories.
Right.
That is driving the creation of new characters, whether
right.
it's Deadpool, whether it's anything like that. They are driving it into graphic novels.
Right.
The graphic novels are driving it into movie adaptations. The popularity of the graphic novels and the movies and the toy things are driving it into gaming and stuff like that. Never before have monthly comics influenced so much
around them. You're absolutely right. Yes,
they're like the. I said it before. Well, I think on an old show, but like the wellspring or whatever.
Yeah,
you call
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And that's where it's all coming out of.
Well,
and yet they're tanking.
Yeah. Well, know? But here's the thing. You know, even years ago, I remember because DC is owned by Warner, and Warner often said in behind closed doors that DC Comics was sort of like their research and development portion of movie and developments for, you know, for Warner Communications. Now, I mean, this is still happening even today. I mean, you've got the Green Lantern movie coming out now and the Batman franchises and all kinds of, you know, even the Wonder Woman pilot, which tanked before it even aired. There's all kinds of things happening through the Warner Brothers and DC franchises. But you're absolutely right. Maybe the comic book medium isn't catching on or is losing people as they're getting older. It's not new enough for the newer generation of readership. Maybe the digital era is the way that people want to have all their comics.
I mean, right, and you just raised a great point, and I would love to see these numbers, including downloads.
Yeah, for
right, because
sure.
That's consumption. So yeah. if Fear Itself number two sold 96,000 copies, but 14,000 copies were, you know, same date downloaded.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
that really sold 110,000 copies.
For sure.
Right.
For
so
sure.
That's a good point. All right, let's move it on. Chris. We have Valiant. Chris, Valiant's returning.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, Jim Shooter's Valiant from years ago with like Harbinger and you know, Angel and Archer or whatever it was called.
Yeah, that's the one. And they're returning, I guess.
By the way, I know that's not what it was called, but I just want to see if anybody would correct me. And no one did, so, you know, whatever.
You know what? Turok, Magnus, Doc Solar. These were all Valiant titles. Harbinger, XO, Man of War. These are all franchises. The Harbinger, XO, Man of War that are coming back. Now Valiant. What would you say? Valiant was probably like the epitome of that '90s speculation boom.
Oh, for sure. You know what? That started off it started off very slowly. Like in the first few two or three issues, nobody really bought them, and then all of a sudden, everybody was buying them because nobody bought the first few issues, and they realized the kind of creators that were on it, and it was good stories, and all kinds of great stuff was happening. So all of a sudden, everybody was speculating on the Valiant comic book craze. But by like issue 10 or 15, when Frank Miller was doing the covers to a couple of the different comics, nobody cared about it anymore.
Right.
They were selling too many copies, and you're in the...
It's so passé,
exactly, right. Yeah.
Right. Well, the guy that bankrolling everything used to be the CEO of Marvel, a guy named Peter Tsuneo.
Okay.
And he apparently thinks that comics is the way to go.
Oh, boy.
Now, but you see, what he says touches on what we talked about in the last story is they asked him in an interview, why are you getting into comics when the comics are dwindling in sales?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, comics is where you develop your brands,
which is
where
true,
you develop your
true.
Characters for other licenses.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's funny about that is, so Turok Dinosaur Hunter was one of the comics that was sort of resurrected from Gold Key, which Valiant ended up publishing again. And then because of Valiant and its association with Acclaim, there was a video game attached to it. And at the time, the Turok Dinosaur Hunter video game was phenomenally outselling everything else for a little while. So, I'm sure they made lots of money selling Turok Dinosaur Hunter games and the property rights for that game, in which case, all of a sudden now that Acclaim, that Gold Key, that Valiant title now actually made some money, even though the series didn't necessarily do that well.
Right.
It was still making money as a property.
Right.
And I think that's what this guy's trying to get at. He's hoping that maybe if we can, if they can create lots of great properties, maybe eventually they can make movies or video games or whatever out of it, novels.
Right. Tsuneo's quote, "We think the comic book industry is the best means to nurture and grow characters that can expand into other mass media channels."
And I think that's just what I said.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Hey, I'm not so bad every once in a while.
Spoken like a true CEO.
It's like a true Tsuneo.
All right. Chris, move on to talk about – oh, this is exciting. I love Fox, the Fox movie studio is hiring the guy that wrote Fringe.
Okay, yeah.
And they're going to do a new Daredevil movie.
Oh, very cool.
And the most exciting part is they're choosing the Born-Again story arc.
Oh, well, that's good. That is one of Miller's best story arcs.
I think that's the – this is a personal opinion.
Yeah.
I think that's the best story arc in superhero comics.
Wow, in superhero comics. Beyond Dark Knight, anything like Spider-Man. Anything by Spider-Man, like you wrote anything. Anything with
that's Spider-Man. He's quite a writer.
That's Spider-Man. He writes some great stuff with LJ or MJ, rather. And
LJ.
LJ, sure. All
right. Right. He DJs. No, Chris, but what the Born Again, of course, the story behind Born Again was the Kingpin, who's Daredevil's arch enemy in Hell's Kitchen there.
Yes, yes.
The crime boss. He figures out Daredevil's secret identity of Matt Murdock, and he systematically ruins his life.
Right.
Just little by little.
Awesome.
Just,
yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's Frank Miller at his absolute best. Right?
Yeah, and it's, it really is. And although I always say people always talk about the Frank Miller run on Daredevil, but I'm also a big fan of the John Romita Jr. and Ann Nocenti run on Daredevil as well, which I think is often overlooked with characters that were created like Typhoid Mary, and it's just really great.
Yeah, that
stuff.
Unfortunately,
it fell on the heels of Frank Miller, so it was kind of overlooked. But man, it's really great storylines, and I remember reading it, getting all hyped up about it, and really good stuff. And if you ever plan on and buying any of the Frank Miller stuff, any of the Daredevil stuff, you really should look into that stuff as well.
All right, Chris, let's move on. We have I was online, obviously trying to write this gem of a show.
Yeah,
and I saw the new Conan trailer.
Oh, how'd it look?
Well, it looked great. It has his voice, Conan's voice, a lot.
Like
he doesn't have an accent.
Oh.
You're starting to worry me because he doesn't have the big Austrian accent.
Yeah, so here I am. I'm Conan.
Hey,
everybody.
How you doing there, guy?
Hey, I'm gonna
get away from that girl, buddy.
I'm gonna crush your skull. Hey, hey, kids. Oh, sorry, that was crusty.
Right.
So,
well, no, I mean he's not a hillbilly.
Oh, right, right.
And he's
okay.
not a redneck.
Yuck.
But he's, I guess what surprised me, he's got a bit of an American accent, and that kind of threw me off a bit.
Because he should be Sumerian.
Yeah, and you should have a Sumerian accent, of course.
Whatever that is. For sure.
But you know, I'm excited. I've read all the Conan stuff. I'm a huge Conan fan.
Right.
Now, well, what excited me is you told me earlier that you just got into the Howard books.
So this is great because you know what? I was away on vacation last week, and you know, I'm at the used bookstore, and I'm trying to figure out what to read. And do I get something by like Nietzsche, or do I get something by Deepak Chopra? You know what? I decided instead go with Robert E. Howard and Conan.
Right, because that was on Oprah's book list. Right?
Absolutely, it was on the number one Oprah book of the month club.
Right,
and wow. I gotta say, you know, so I read now of course Robert E. Howard. Most of his stories were like short stories that were written for the pulps back in the day, right?
Like 1930s weird tales. I believe, yes.
So the novel that I had, it was actually called Conan the Warrior, and it was actually three of his short stories all combined into one sort of thing. Now it had like an introduction by L. Sprague DeCamp, and who sort of took on the reins of Conan after Robert E.
With,
Howard.
With Lynn Carter, she did
with
some
Lynn Carter.
Stuff.
That's
too,
right. So, but this was all the stuff I was reading was all by Robert E. Howard, and the first story I read was Red Nails, and man, you gotta be on some sort of weird acid trip to read that.
I think that Red Nails was an acid trip, really. Yeah. It was like a psychedelic ride.
Yeah,
it was an amazing story. If anybody's going to try Red Nails to read Red Nails. Please don't try it where you have to continue later. You have to sit down and read it through all at once.
Yeah.
No distractions and lose yourself in that story. It's absolutely incredible.
It took me a good 20 pages to kind of get into the rhythm of the book because I was not used to the writing style. I was not used to his use of imagery and his use like his very vibrant images that he produces in your head sort of thing.
He really paints
a picture that no one has ever written before. And it was pretty amazing. Like, you know, he really crafts out this tale of this barbarian warrior that, I wasn't used to before.
Okay, fanboy, calm down.
I'm just saying, it was really good.
No, excellent, Chris. Hey, listen, we have a big topic we're going to talk about later on. So let's do a musical segue or a musical interlude. I'm sorry,
musical interlude. Okay, well here we go. As you know, I'm a big fan of the Spider-Man Krantz series from years ago. So here's a little bit of the old Spider-Man for you.
Yes, that, of course, unmistakably Tito Puentes and his big brass band doing Spider-Man.
Absolutely, yeah. You gotta love. That is like pure picking up chicks by the radio side. I don't even know what that
by
means.
By the poolside.
Yeah, exactly.
In Tijuana.
Yeah, that's
with
it.
An
alligator at your side.
With a wrestling mask on.
Exactly,
right.
Yes.
Good times. Chris, brings us to the big feature.
I don't really know how Tito Puentes or alligators brings us to DC, but sure.
No, it brings us to the big feature of the show.
Do we have a sponsor? A sponsor, okay.
And the sponsor is Rick Grimes Zombie Repellent, available at bait shops everywhere.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, if so you, pick that up and because apparently it repels zombies.
Oh, well, that's good to know. If I ever run across a zombie, I should pick up some.
No, you should pick up some before.
Oh, right. Got it. Okay. You know, I always get confused on all
right.
that stuff.
All right. Listen, Chris, we have, I don't know, 15 minutes or so to talk about this. And we're probably going to talk about this topic much more
in the coming months. For sure.
And we're going to try to tackle today and get through this monumental change that DC Comics is doing.
Yeah, you know what? This is unprecedented territory.
Unprecedented
for DC Comics. For any comic book company. Any, you know, this is okay. If we were to liken, do you like that term? Liken.
Liken.
I'm not talking about the Moss either.
Right.
If we were to liken this kind of turnover of events to television or movies, this doesn't happen very often. You know, certainly not in soap operas, which is really what a comic book is. A comic mm-hmm. book is a monthly soap opera in printed form. Very rarely do you see an entire franchise, an entire universe, get turned on its heels and create a whole new entity in and of itself.
You're absolutely right. So DC Comics coming in September is basically going to not even reboot. They're not even calling it a reboot. They're just kind of going to remake
everything. They're going to revamp everything.
Revamp.
Yes.
Is that a good word? Revamp?
Sure, why not?
Right, they're renumbering all their titles going to number one.
Yeah.
And they are even revising every single character.
Now, I know we're going to talk about the renumbering system, and we're going to talk a little bit about DC renumbering every issue, but I can't, and I apologize, Walt. We didn't actually have this in my list of things, in our list of things to talk about here, but you know, I can't help but have to bring this up. Do you think that this DC renumbering thing has anything to do with the fact that the Schuster and Siegel Estates have won the rights to the character of Superman from the original Golden Age Superman character? So, having said that, does that mean that now DC is saying to themselves, you know what, let's revamp everything. So no matter what happens in the future, we're going to retain the rights of our own characters so that, you know, the estate of William Moulton Marston can't come back for Wonder Woman, and the estate of Bob Kane can't come back for Batman. You know, so maybe they're doing this so that they can all of a sudden say, hey, you know what, no matter what, these are all number ones, these are all brand new characters, these are all ours. Because if Siegel and Schuster can win the rights of the Golden Age Superman, what's to stop them from now taking that character, that Golden Age Superman character, to, say, the Marvel Company, to Valiant, to whoever, and say, hey, you know what, we have the original Superman, do you want to publish this?
Right.
So why not have DC recreate everything in order to make sure that this is never going to happen again?
Excellent point. I just think, I'm not a legal guy, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but, you know, if DC revamps and Batman comes out in September with Detective Number One, which was going to make me cry, I think, it's still Batman. I know it's the Batman created with a little different costume and a little different whatever, a little different origin, a little updated, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't see, you know, the Kane estate not being able, the lawyers anyway, not being able to draw a line from the 1939 Detective 27 Batman to the 2011 Batman,
but they were able to do that for the Superman character. Why couldn't they do it for the Batman character? Why couldn't they?
I think
they're going to change them and tweak them just enough so that they're just different enough to say, hey, you know what, these aren't the Golden Age characters that you remember. So we own these characters in their entirety. You can't possibly challenge these. They now belong to us. We will give credit to whoever needs to have credit given to them. But, you know, having said that, we're going to own these characters.
Okay. Valid point. Fair enough point. And you might be onto something. How much of this as well is Marvel carving out a larger and larger chunk of the monthly titles?
Right.
You know, there was a graph there, but Marvel was close to 50% this month.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, DC in their communique, they said that they're going to make everything more modern, the characters more accessible, all that kind of stuff.
You know, but I don't really understand what does that mean, more accessible, more modern?
Well,
does that mean that, you know, okay, well, Thomas Wayne's parents Bruce Wayne's parents were actually divorced now and they've got three kids and they've got money problems and losing estate sales and stuff like that? Like, what does that mean by more modern?
I think it's more perception, right? So if you asked comic guys our age, and not our age even, but just comic guys, to tell us the difference between the Marvel and DC universe, you know?
Okay.
The Marvel guys are unemployed. The Marvel guys are dirty. The Marvel guys are they have personal problems. The Marvel guys, you know, this was always the shtick. The DC guys were godlike. The DC guys were untouchable. The DC guys were blah, 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 blah,
right,
blah.
Right, right, right.
So this shtick, whether it was true or not, all the way through the lines, I don't know.
Right.
But this shtick stuck in
stuck.
A way.
Stuck. It is. I like stuck.
And so is DC now going, wait a minute, you know, Marvel with their badasses and their Deadpools and whatever the hell they're selling now.
Yeah.
It's working.
You know, it's funny you should say that because, you know what, DC could never quite pull that off.
Right.
You know, they had characters like Deathstroke the Terminator.
Lobo. Right.
You know, it worked for a little while, but it kind of died off. I guess, in a sense, I suppose Punisher did too. It kept on dying off and coming back. But, you know, those kind of characters, they're those one-trick ponies, they really only have one thing to sell, and once they're sold, it's what are you looking for?
Yeah, like the core DCU is like a fantasy land in a way, right? And it's hard to crack. Now, you know, and that's why DC had success with things like Vertigo,
right,
which Marvel didn't have.
No,
because DC couldn't. They needed to separate and make some grimy, dirty stuff. But they couldn't do it in the DCU because purists love that kind of DCU,
right, right.
You know.
But Marvel tried that. They had their own line of epic, you know,
but you
titles.
See, Marvel didn't need it as much because Marvel's universe is adaptable enough to have a little grime and to have, you know, Brubaker writing crime comics for Daredevil and that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So that was the difference there. I don't know. I mean, this is going to be interesting. I don't know if DC is doing the right thing here in terms of, you know, they're betting the farm on the fact that their old DCU wasn't good enough going forward.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? I don't know if they think that it wasn't good enough, but I think they think that things are going to need to change. But I wonder, because of the buying power of people that have grown up with the classic DC characters, I wonder how much this change is going to hurt DC in the coming years, because now all of a sudden the people who are growing up with this supposed new DC, you know, there's no new DC cartoons, right? Like, are we going to have, you know, the cartoons and the video games and all that kind of stuff? Are they all going to be now based on the new DC? And in which case, what happens with the old collectors, with guys our age who are kind of buying stuff based on the old DC?
Right. So DC's like, it's like, you know, they're like salmon right now. They're swimming upstream. No, because
we're just the giant bear swatting them out of the water.
Yeah, pretty well, because they're okay. So they're going, you know, the future isn't the old DC purist.
Right.
You know, the future isn't the old guy that loves his Barry Allen a certain way and that's it. So they're abandoning those guys. If
right.
they don't buy that September number one, the DC is saying so be it.
Yeah.
Right? The problem is DC is treading into an era where the monthly sales are going down. They're thinking they're gonna grab new readers, but there are no new readers to grab.
Now having said that, you know,
I did just say
nothing.
It.
Nothing makes, you know, comic book readers froth of the mouth more than number one issues. So now all of a sudden, DC is going to have a slew of number one issues because they think that they're going to, you know, retire off these things in 20 years.
No, I think those days are done.
You think so?
I think those days are done. Those guys are gone. I think there. I was talking to some guy at the shop there 2 weeks ago, and he had, I don't know, I'm going to say it wrong, but it's roughly in the ballpark here. He said, from Marvel and DC in the last 25 years, there is one book, and I forget what it was, that sells on eBay now for more than $20.
Right.
Right. All the books that are selling on eBay now for more than $20, $50, $80, or whatever, are all independents.
In the last 20 years.
In the last 20 years, 10 that. Years, I whatever. That for so sure. You're getting properties like because it's all about print runs, right?
For sure.
So, you know, Marvel, whatever, they're just going to print 25,000, 30,000 copies
if not even more.
Of whatever that new number one is, whether it's, you know, but the thing is things like Chew, Morning Glories, Walking Dead. These are all the books that
Mouse Guard, The Goon, and all those kind of
they're
books.
They're coming out with 8,000 print runs at the beginning.
Yeah, if that
they,
even.
They become a hit.
Yeah.
You know, by issue 3 or 4, then all of a sudden everybody wants the number one.
Yeah.
And so these things are selling for 30, 40 bucks on eBay or whatever,
you know,
like that. So I don't think these guys are pretty savvy guys. They're not going to go after Wonder Woman number one and buy 20 copies come September. They're not. They're not going to be able to get sales that way. DC. I don't think.
You know what? Maybe. We've just solved the problems of DC and Marvel.
Right.
Maybe they need to really, because for a long time, even now, Marvel and DC would say we don't want to hire anybody until you've kind of cut your chops doing the independent thing for a while. And it's the independents that are selling the hot books. So maybe they need to go back to the guys with the fresh ideas, with the independent titles and all that, and say, hey, you know what? Come and try your book with Marvel. Come and try your book on DC. Maybe we'll actually make some money for a change.
Right. I think maybe they need hollow foil covers.
Scratch and sniff.
Scratch and sniff polybag.
Scratch and sniff She-Hulk comics.
Right. Woo! Okay. Chris, but I'm reading these creative teams. This is kind of exciting when you look at because it seems like every other day DC is putting out some huge press release on, okay, you know, the Batman titles are getting these creative teams, the Superman titles are getting these creative teams, so on and so forth. So you're getting guys like, who do we got here? Jeff Johns. And he's doing even Rice, is that it? The guy's name?
Rice, yeah.
They're doing an Aquaman.
Ivan?
Yeah, that's a good point, Ivan.
Excuse me.
I said even.
Even. You say even, I say Ivan, even, Ivan. Let's call the whole thing off.
That even, he's an odd cat.
Yeah.
So even, Aquaman number one.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing, though. I'm looking at that press release that said 10 new number one creative teams.
Yes.
So let me go over this.
Okay.
Let me go over this.
I'm
real quick. Okay?
I'm waiting.
Aquaman number one with Jeff Johns involved. Francis Manapul. He's doing The Flash number one. Okay. Ethan Van Shriver, Gail Simone are doing Fury of the Firestorm. Yep. Okay, let me keep going a little bit here.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
We got TJ Krul. He's doing Green Arrow.
With Dan Jurgens, by the
Dan
way.
Dan Jurgens,
who has been around for forever.
Yeah. Eric Wallace did a lot of work on Titans. He's doing Mr. Terrific, number one, with Roger Robinson. We got a guy, Captain Atom, number one, coming out. My point is, I honestly don't think any of these titles are sustainable. I honestly don't think so.
Okay, so
You got flipping Captain Atom. You got Mr. Terrific. You got Justice League International. Okay, Green Arrow. Okay, you have Savage Hawkman. There's a winner. Okay, so Savage Hawkman number one's coming out. Aquaman. And boy, that guy can carry a title.
Okay.
Nobody carries a title like Aquaman.
Okay. Your point is well taken.
So, you know, what the hell? I mean, you got Wonder Woman, maybe Flash, maybe, right, because of the old purists.
Yeah, okay, right? So you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, some of these titles probably could use a little work, but you never know. I mean, you know, you never know. Maybe Justice League International might do well. Aaron Lopresti will provide the interior art, and Aaron Lopresti has been around for a long time, and he did work on X-Men and all kinds of other books, right? So you never know. Dan Jurgens did a lot of work on Superman. He's been around a long time. So
right.
Maybe these guys, you know, maybe the characters haven't been fleshed out well enough until these guys have gotten to them.
I'm hoping so, Chris. I'm hoping so. I mean, there's a reason, though. There's a reason why DC did separate press releases for their Superman family and their Batman family. Because I think they need those core characters to perform well.
I agree.
So we have Superman. I mean, you got Superman Action Comics, number one, again, which is going to make me cry when I see that come out.
But again, it's written by Grant Morrison. With art by Rives Morales.
Right. And then you got Superman, number one, again, coming out with Jesus Marino there. Jesus Marino, sorry. And you got Supergirl number one, Superboy number one. So you have four core soup titles.
Jesus Marino. I think you just created a new trade paperback by like Daniel Klaus or something like that. Okay, but you know what I do find interesting is you mentioned Superboy number one, written by Scott Lobdell. Now, Scott Lobdell was one of the major writers of the X-Men back in the day in the 1990s when X-Men was at its hottest. So maybe they're thinking that maybe this guy can bring some special magic powers to Superboy.
Really, Chris? Superboy and Supergirl? Really, Chris? Come on. Think about it.
Okay, but hold on. Back in the day, Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes was a hot book.
1950s?
Okay, maybe, but it was still hot. Oh, I'm just saying. Man. Maybe those days are here again.
You know, like, what's the who played Catwoman on Batman?
Julie Newmar?
She was hot.
Yeah, she was.
Not anymore, though, Chris.
Oh, boy, here we go. Right. Maybe Eartha Kitt?
Eartha Kitt.
Lee Merriweather?
Listen, DC, the Batman titles as well, exciting. So you're getting Detective number one, Tony Daniels. Who's working on? Let me see. Who's working on Detective?
You know, if only Tony Danza was one of the writers.
Tony Danza.
Now that would be a comic.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? Hey,
that's good.
Hey.
Batman number one. You got a couple other Bat titles, Dark Knight number one and Batman and Robin number one.
Yeah.
So I'm having more faith in the Batman titles.
Okay, well, Dark Knight number one is going to be drawn and written by David Finch. You know, you've got some good artists here. Batman number one has Greg Capullo. You know, Batman and Robin has Pat Gleason, you know, and Peter J. Tomasi. Like, you know, the creative teams are really strong on the Batman titles. So I can't see how they can go wrong.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but I'm still worried. I'm still worried.
Okay,
this is a big thing.
But hold on. So here you go. So, you know, they're saying the dark side of the new DCU here.
Yeah, they're doing DCU the dark side as
well. So, you know, Jeff Lemire, who's a good friend of ours.
Great Canadian boy.
Yeah, who's doing Superman right now, right?
Yep.
He's going to be taking over the writing of Animal Man.
You know what? Animal Man, you see, I read that a little bit about the dark thing, and this is what worries me too. Vertigo is good. Vertigo was a great thing. Vertigo was a sideline. Vertigo, people read Vertigo stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
They read it more maybe in graphic novel format.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had your Swamp Things and your Animal Mans and all that kind of stuff.
I'd mentioned Preacher, but people don't like it when I mention Preacher.
Right, Preacher or Conan or Grant Morrison.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think we mentioned all three.
Yeah, look at that. We've mentioned them all.
Yeah, look at it. So they're bringing the plan with DC is they're bringing all these guys into DCU proper.
Yeah.
They're bringing, you know, the Hellblender. Is it
Hellblazer?
Hellblazer.
Hellblender. If you want your margarita really, really hot, go to the Hellblender.
So they're bringing all these guys in. We're running out of time with the show, and we're going to revisit this topic again. But this is for DC is comic book company number two, with Marvel. You know, they're close. DC for the comic book industry to be viable, DC has to be healthy too. It can't just be Marvel. This whole DC thing is quite substantial. It's has everybody kind of scratching their heads, and it's going to be something that you and I are going to explore as the months go on, even in depth. I think we kind of rushed through the whole change.
We will visit this again, and we'll see how things go. But unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today.
Comic Culture is written, it's produced by Anthony Falcone, engineered by James McIntosh. Please head out to your local comic book shop and support your local comic store. And also, visit comicbookdaily.com, click on the podcast link, scroll down to the bottom, and please add comments.
And have yourself a wonderful day.